Four or five years ago, as a congregation, we were introduced to Julio and Katie Asaza and linked with them. They are career missionaries with the Covenant. They live in Colombia, South America. And if you were here last summer, you may recall they were with us in person. We had a meal with them. They shared with us and their boys, Samuel and Benjamin. Yeah, I've got Benjamin. I couldn't think of Samuel's name. Their boys were here, and they did the missionary kid panel discussion that we hosted. They've gone through a trauma in the last month of Julio's brother William dying ultimately of an insecticide poisoning. Last year they left here and, among other things, ended up going to England to spend time in Oxford, where Julio has been accepted and is working now on his PhD through Oxford. They do a lot of educational work with the pastors in the many outlying remote areas in Colombia. And so this morning we have a greeting and a video from them to say hi and to refresh your awareness of the work they do.
Hello, church family. This is Julio and Katie Sasa, serving with the Evangelical Covenant Church in Colombia.
A year ago, we were on a short home assignment and were able to visit with many of you. No trips planned this year, but we wanted to give you a little glimpse into what life and ministry have been like for us, particularly in four areas, and that's education, formation, hosting, and peace building.
This past year, we have continued to support the theological training of pastors and lay leaders in Colombia, which is a high priority for the Covenant Church. Pastor Jorge Gonzalez, who is finishing his education at the seminary, has taken on leadership of theological education. Julio continues to support the educational process by coordinating the certificate in Bible and Ministry, which has 40 students from across Colombia participating. This is a year-long program, and both Katie and Julio are teaching courses that meet online and in person. The month of August, Julio will be teaching Contemporary Challenges for the Church, and in October, Katie will be teaching Christian Education. Students have said the certificate programs are life-changing, empowering, and have equipped them to serve others.
One of the questions that continues to come up is how to best serve the children and youth in our communities. That is why the Covenant Youth Organization is committed to equipping youth leaders. I've seen firsthand the impact on the lives of people like Andres, Maria Alejandra, and Santiago, who were part of a weekend-long retreat in Monteria I was invited to teach at. Over several years, Andres has been mentored and trained and has stepped into leadership. Now he is mentoring and training young leaders in his region. Pray for me as I continue to write the curriculum that is being used in this formational process. Also pray for me as I continue to support children's ministry leaders through workshops and helping to create a support network. Before the COVID pandemic, we were always hosting people in our home. COVID brought that to a halt, but it has slowly become a reality again of hosting visitors, friends, colleagues, and both national and international guests. We've hosted meals and an open house with the Biblical Certificate students and a team from Faith Covenant in Wheaton. We shared life for a week with our friend Eileen from the Embera Catillo community as he was catching up on his studies in Old Testament. In the past 2 months, we've hosted meals with students from the Biblical Seminary, as well as students from a master's program through a biblical seminary in Costa Rica that Julio is serving as a TA for. We love these spaces and times to deepen relationships and facilitate community. Julio had the opportunity to travel to El Bagre in July and meet with the leaders of BP's Make Peace. They continue to serve in their community through workshops for kids that focus on healthy relationships, emotional intelligence, and creation care. The kids and youth in the project did a day-long park cleanup in their community. Julio will have the opportunity to visit again in September with representatives from Covenant World Relief and Development. As Julio moves forward in his doctoral studies, these visits and relationships are key for developing his research. We are grateful to these leaders who have served as friends even this past weekend attending the funeral of Julio's eldest brother to show their support. Our boys continue to thrive, meeting new challenges and enjoying time with friends, starting new grades in the next month.
As a family, we are so thankful for your continued support and prayers of our life and ministry in Colombia.
I would like to thank you for your prayers, especially in this time of crisis in my life and my family, for the death of my brother. So thank you so much for all your support and pray for my whole family. Thank you so much and God bless you.
God bless you. We're so grateful for each and every one of you.
And so as we continue to pray for them, this gives you a little picture of their life, the boys as well as Julio and Katie. The fact that COVID has receded has allowed them to be more open and inviting, but there's still some restrictions there, and we just look forward to partnering with them. I want to remind you that as we met as a congregation in January and approved our annual budget, a portion of what we give, a portion of what we receive is allocated to the denomination, and much of that gets allocated to Julio and Katie. Not all of it. Some goes to administrative costs and the seminary and other things, but a large chunk of it does. And then also we choose to support on line items other specific missionaries, of whom we've met the Martins already. Alice and Johnny are here today. Next Sunday it'll be Joy Dillon. Just continue to be aware that this is a commitment we of a congregation have made. And this is our opportunity to get updates from them. So you have an investment in these people, and you have it's a deep investment, and it's wonderful to be caught up.
You may be seated.
Obviously, my other half is not here with me this morning, but he did prepare a video. So I'm going to actually let him share first, and then I'll come back. But he's going to read through Psalm 121. And share just a few quick words, but in case you wanted to turn, I thought I would intro that first, and then I'm going to let him share his few minutes, and then I'll come back.
Psalms 121, verse 1 to 8. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. The psalmist was asking himself, where does my help come from? So the psalmist answered his question. He said, my help comes from the Lord. He answers himself. But what about the people who don't know the Lord? What about the people who live in the world, but they don't care about God? So they are looking for help and hope, but they can't find it. Why? Because the world is like an empty pit. They are dug in a dusty valley with no water. Yes, they are looking for water, but there is none. Because the world cannot offer the peace and joy they are looking for. That's why we have many people committing suicide. We have people who are addicted to drugs and sex and all kind of bad things happening in the world. Because they are looking for hope and peace, but they can't find it. But for us, who believe in God, it's different. Why? It's different. In Matthew chapter 11, verse 28 to 30, Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus knows how the world is going. That's why he said, come to me and you will find rest. The rest the Lord is talking here is the peace he gives, the joy he gives. And Jesus taught us in John chapter 14, verse 27, he said, peace I leave with you. I give you my peace. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your heart be troubled and do not be afraid. So Jesus gives us the peace and the peace Jesus gives is shalom, which means peace in the middle of the perfect storm. The peace in the middle of the perfect storm. Yes, we are surrounded by mountains. We are surrounded by problems all every day. But the peace the Lord gives is different than any kind of things or joy or comfort the world can offer us.
Okay, so in case you haven't picked up the theme for today, it's about hope and peace. And if you're familiar with Haiti and seeing Haiti on the news recently, those might seem like odd themes relating to Haiti. Haiti, it's a little bit the opposite of peace and hope right now. So before I get into that, though, I realized that some of you, many of you maybe, know pieces of my story and my connection to Haiti, but maybe don't know all of it, or maybe only know one side of it from a couple people. So I felt like I should maybe just start at the beginning. My connection with Haiti actually begins right here in this church. January 12th, 2010 was the 30-hour famine. I was a sophomore in high school and was over in the gathering place. I couldn't tell you what hour we were on, but we were in the middle of fasting and praying and serving our community. And I don't know why, but somebody decided to put the TV on over there. And it's like this ginormous, or was, I don't know if it's still over there, ginormous TV. And what was on that TV was news coverage of the earthquake that had just happened in Haiti. I had traveled, I had done some missions here and there, but I was glued to that TV, and I don't know that I could have explained why. I don't think I probably could have even told you where Haiti was on a map at that point. And yet there was just something within me that was drawn to the country. Fast forward 3 years, 3.5 years, and I took my very first trip to Haiti, which conveniently was exactly a decade ago. And the way when you arrive in Haiti, it's a pretty small airport, and when you land, or at least at the time when you landed, you actually deplaned onto the tarmac. And, you know, it's like August in Haiti, it's, I don't know, 90 degrees and 4,000% humidity. And I was standing on the tarmac and immediately thought, this is home. I had been in the country legally for about probably 15 minutes at that point, and I had been able to identify that that was where my heart was. I spent that week doing, I don't know, mission projects. I couldn't really remember what. But through that saw so much hope and potential. Yes, there was need and there was hurt. There was hunger, there was brokenness, but there was still so much hope and aspiration amongst the people. 10 years later, almost to the day, I have now been out of Haiti for 10 months. I left Haiti 10 months ago thinking, well, maybe we'll give it like a month or 2 months. I came with Keely and Sophia. Many of you guys know that. And I'm now living a life that I certainly did not think was what was to come. I'm having to continually remind myself, and Johnny and I have this conversation regularly, that though it feels really bleak, there is still hope for a more stable Haiti, or for a future for Haiti. I moved to Haiti in 2016, and Haiti was far from easy at that point. But from 2016 to 2018, I would say, we lived a somewhat stable life. There was hunger, there was a lack of education, there was lack of medical care, but it certainly is not the same level that we're seeing right now. I like to say in 2018, Haiti broke. Brazil conveniently lost the World Cup right as the president announced gas price increases and chaos ensued. Burning tires, roadblocks, the whole nine yards. That was the first time I'd ever really experienced that. And certainly many of the people living in Haiti, so that was the first time the country had experienced it to that level in many, many years. Communication was cut off, roads were cut off, access to food was cut off. It lasted about 48 hours, and then things returned to what we had discovered was normal. Hope became easier to come by. Why does it seem like, though, that when things are easy or peaceful or put together, that hope is easier to find? As the years went by, from 2018 to 2021 probably, there was on and off climax, hot points, lockdowns as we would call them, but they never lasted more than a couple weeks, and then things would calm and we would all say, oh, it's all better. We have hope that things will get better from here on. It certainly felt like it couldn't get worse. We stopped saying that phrase because it just continued to get worse. But also in a lot of ways it was good. It was good for the ministry. It was good for the work that we were doing and our Haitian team having to find a new sense of responsibility over the work they were doing. We relied a lot less on foreigners because foreigners simply couldn't come in. We didn't really have a choice. We got creative on fundraising as an organization. We got creative on the way that we empowered our Haitian team to do the work that we had foreigners coming in to do, but they were fully capable of. God was working through those periods of waiting. There was no doubt in that, but it's a lot easier now to stand back and look at those times and say, oh yeah, that was God doing that. In the moment, it didn't always feel like that. In 2021, Haiti's president was assassinated. There continued to be a lot of questions, a lot of unknowns, and very quickly the situation continued to deteriorate. We saw an increase in gang activity, kidnappings, etc. I won't go too far into that, but my mom used to always say to me, because she would call me begging me to come back, and she used to always use the analogy of a frog in boiling water. And I remember being in the moment and thinking, oh, stop, you're overreacting, it's okay. Because when you're in it, you don't realize it. That analogy is you to kill a frog or eat a frog, you put it in a warm pot of water and slowly turn up the heat until it's too late for it to realize that it can't get out. It almost was the same way in Haiti. The heat was turning up. The chaos continued to get worse from what we already thought was as bad as it could get. So 4-5 years later, how are we continuing to search for hope in the ministry, in the work that we're doing, for the future of the country? Haitians have a proverb or a saying that says, behind mountains, there are more mountains. We hear that very frequently, especially right now. So the question is, okay, so if there's mountains beyond the mountains, or mountains, 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 how do we see those mountains that we're facing? Do we see them as just the peak, as the top, as something to conquer? Do we see them as a journey where we can look back at where we came from and look towards the next? Do we see them as an impossible hill to climb? Do we see them as the point of the valley where we're just stuck in the bottom and all we have to do is go is up? The million-dollar question, which I wish I could answer, but I can't, is Haiti at the bottom? Where is the bottom? What does that bottom look like? Why does it continually feel like Haiti is sliding backwards down the mountain? Or maybe the mountain's growing in front of us. I don't know. At what point do we stop looking at that and start saying, can we find the peace we're looking for in this moment? I have a lot of doubt, can't entirely say it, but I have a lot of doubt that Haiti's problems will solve overnight. God can do amazing things, but I doubt. So do we continue to say, well, maybe when foreign intervention comes, we'll find peace. Maybe when Haiti has a president, we'll find peace. Maybe when the gangs are put at bay, we'll find peace. And all of those things may bring some level of peace to the country, but that's not ultimately what we're searching for. Ultimately, we're searching for the peace of the Lord. Johnny shared about the peace and the hope that we have in the Lord. And when we look at Haiti, I think we're all continually challenged to ask, where are those things? Why does it feel like the country can't seem to find them? There is no easy solution. There's no quick answer. There's no obvious answer. But as I thought about that, my first response was, well, the Lord knows, right? We all can say that. We can all sit here and say, oh, the Lord knows. He's got plans. And then it clicked that that is a very common phrase in Haiti. Bon Dieu connaît. God knows. The Lord knows. It's a little like, you know how we in English or in America have, you say, hey, how are you? And the quick response is, I'm good. How are you? Often really kind of without thinking. Maybe it's not actually the truth, but it's just kind of our natural quick response. In Haiti, they've got two of those. Well, they probably have more, but they've two that I can think of. The Lord knows, and if God wants. People who may or may not be believers, those are their responses. And I find that really, really interesting. Again, as we think about our ministry, Chances for Children as a ministry where I work, Johnny and I's life, it does feel like there's mountains beyond mountains. Johnny and I moved to Phoenix 6 months ago, I think. And I think we definitely had this idea that we were going to find this perfect peace. Our marriage has been 5 years, and if you remember to when I started, those 5 years have basically been the 5 years of chaos in Haiti. Our marriage has been that chaos, in good ways and hard ways, don't get me wrong, but definitely when we made the decision to move to Phoenix, I think there was a piece of us that thought, this is it, we can leave that chaos behind. That certainly isn't necessarily the case. There are more problems, right? There are we've conquered one mountain. We've gotten beyond the mountain of Haiti or living in Haiti. And there's the next mountain. Finding a church, finding a community, finding housing, living a much more expensive life in America. And then, of course, Phoenix decided to bless us with the most amazing summer of 110 degrees all July. There are mountains beyond the mountains, but we do. We continue to have hope in the Lord and what he can do. Johnny has a book by Max Lucado, called Anxious for Nothing. And there's a quote in there that we now have written on our fridge because it just feels so encompassing to our situation as well as the situation when we look at Haiti. And it says, the good life begins not when our circumstances change, but when our attitude towards them does. I think we probably all have circumstances or mountains in front of us. Finding a new pastor, finding a church community, waiting for that job, that family resolution to come, the chaos of gangs and violence to subside. We don't always have control over those circumstances. But we do have control over our attitude and where we search for our hope. As we sit in this period of waiting, again, that waiting could be whatever it is. And in the case of Haiti and the organization where we're working, we're sitting here looking at that mountain, or that next mountain maybe. Maybe we're looking back at where we came from or where we started, which might have been in front. And maybe we've gone backwards. But we can also always find ways that the Lord has been working, the ways that he's moved the boulders in front of us, carved out the path, provided shade and protection when it felt like that chaos was going to explode. Unfortunately, as much as I wish I did, I don't have a crystal ball to be able to find the perfect solution for Haiti. I'm grateful that the organization, Chances for Children, where I'm working, continues to operate despite the fact we don't have foreigners on the ground. We don't have Americans on the ground anymore. But we continue to cling to that hope that we have in him. I can turn my eyes to him. I can rely on the strength that he provides. And knowing that he is our source of hope, that he is moving the boulders and carving out paths even when we can't see it. And I have to cling to that hope when I look at the situation in Haiti, when I turn on the news and watch what's happening, not even just in Haiti, but around the world. I think the only choice I have is to cling to the hope that he is working despite the fact I may not be able to see it. So I leave you with that hope that we have to cling to in the Lord. And I echo what Julio and his Katie shared, and just the gratefulness, the gratitude for the support that Valley Covenant continues to provide for myself and Johnny, for the organization we work for, and for the country of Haiti.